Mixed in the Dark. Hey, what's up? It's Mai Ying from Mix in the Dark. It's been a minute, but it's good to be back. I lost my voice for about a week, and then I had this very raspy recovering voice for the week following, and then I just decided that I wouldn't record at all until I have my full voice back. I have recorded while sick, and it's just not it, and I'm not going to do that again. I do prioritize my health, my family, and my career before my podcast, so if you notice that I am not posting, the reason probably has to do with one of those things. Anyways, I'm a tad late, but International Women's Day was on March 8th, celebrating the achievements of women in the world. I come from a large family that is predominantly women. I also have an extremely traditional background, so I've seen a side where women, and specifically Hmong women, are oppressed, and I've also seen the side where women are empowered. And like I said, my parents are very traditional. There are 8 of us sisters in the family, and we have only one brother, and he is the youngest. So as you can see, boys are very valued in our family. From a young age, my sisters and I were taught to be what Hmong folks today would call Nya 10Ks, meaning you know how to be a housewife and you just know your duties as a housewife. Extended families tend to judge me because, you guys, I just look really young. They may think that I can't speak Hmong or that I don't know my traditional roles, like Guchipo Tasma or something like that. And side note, I do set boundaries in my traditional role as a Hmong daughter, wife, and nya, or daughter-in-law. However, I also have a respect for the Hmong culture, so I abide based on my own personal values. This is probably part of the reason why I don't care to show my face as the Mix in the Dark narrator, because it shouldn't matter what I look like. What matters is that I have this genuine love for storytelling and scary stories. I also, in general, care a lot about people and their stories, which is probably why I am a teacher. So I want to highlight my mom for International Women's Day. Totally not biased, but she is the best person ever. She is the person who made me who I am today. And it really wasn't until she passed that I really found out the pain that she carried. She was not happy in her marriage. And I'm not bad mouthing my dad. I will say that he is just not her first choice in marriage. She bore 9 children total and lost 2. And even though she lived that very traditional Hmong woman role to the end, like literally to her very last breath, she not only taught us sisters to be kind, thoughtful, and to understand our role as a Hmong daughter. On the other side of it, she also taught us to be resilient, to stand up for ourselves, and to set boundaries when our values are under attack. To be in a situation where you are heartbroken every single day, living in oppression, but you're still fighting to teach your daughters the fine line between understanding our very complicated Hmong culture to understanding that you must also value self-respect and self-worth is an incredible thing, and she will forever be my number one. I am mentioning all of these things because our story today will require you to be open to our Hmong traditions, cultures, and folktales. This story is about why Hmong Tho Gyai Su Ga, or why Hmong Thos don't have spiritual altars. Just in case you don't know, Su Ga is what protects your household and is usually represented by an altar. If you are not Hmong, you might also wonder why there are so many Hmong people with the same last names. These are called clans or subgroups of the Hmong. Our history and roots are often identified, remembered, and associated based on our clan and the area that our clan came from. Through the years, we have westernized and turned our clans into last names. So for example, my last name, if you have not figured it out yet, is Hyung. And so lots of people think that I'm Hmong Ya because I introduced myself as Mai Yang from Mix in the Dark. Mai Yang is actually my full first name. So I am from the Hyung clan, but the Hyung clan from Long King Hmong Ya were also called Hmong Sing Kwan. And so it's all very complicated, but your story may differ depending on where you are from. The thing that you have to understand about these types of stories is that it does not directly represent all of the Hmong Tho population, not even the Hmong population. It is a folktale. Folktales are a story based on true events that people cannot explain. So then they try to make sense of the situation by using their current knowledge and beliefs. And the term clan will be mentioned throughout this story. Just know that it does not pertain to everyone in the Tho clan. This is just the author's family line. mine or anyone from that particular section of the Thaw clan. I do have listeners who are here just for the stories and will skip the introduction. If you see them shooting really strong words in the comments, please check them for me and let's help each other understand each other. I thank you in advance. Let's get to the story. Please enjoy. This story took place while my family lived in Thoyote. Although the exact date can no longer be traced, this story has been passed down for many, many generations. Supposedly, way back when the Hmong people only spoke Shuo, not Chinese, but true Shuo. According to my grandparents, Thoyote is a large area of land located in southern China that the Hmong people fled to after the wars between the Chinese and the Hmong people. The most comprehensible comparison of Thoyote would be the ancient Yangtze province of China, dating back to about 1600-1700 CE. The generation that my grandparents remember hearing this story from was their great-grandparents. Even then, those grandparents credited their grandparents for the telling of this story. Regardless of the exact time frame, on with the story of the Thaw clan. In our bamboo homes located in the isolated mountains of Thoyote, all of our relatives gathered to celebrate the new year. Throughout the day, our families were performing hupli ceremonies to call their spirits back home after a hard and laborious year of farming. Our family had already completed our hupli ceremony in the early morning, as well as the other traditional New Year rituals, of which were performed throughout the afternoon. The only remaining ritual was the suka. Our family would tzi the suka, just as every other clan would. Tzi suka is an action that allows your household spirits to come protect and bless you. The old suka would be removed and replaced with a new one. Incense and joss paper would be burnt, a long meaningful incantation would be spoken, and the chicken would be sacrificed. Afterwards, the chicken would be cooked and placed underneath the altar with a fresh bowl of rice, burning incense, and a candle of which would be placed there 3 days as the offering. As the family relatives celebrated, the altar was left alone, almost ignored, since no one was to touch it unless the candle and incense needed replacing. As the remaining sunlight dimmed, our family and friends were so engulfed in the celebration and relaxation that many drifted off to sleep after the hefty drinking and eating. The children were exhausted from their frolicking, so they too migrated to bed. With the relatives in a slumber state in the cover of night, a terrible taboo was about to take place. Allegedly, as our family slept, someone or something had opened the bamboo wall behind the suka altar and abruptly tried to pull the sacrificial chicken out of the house. As the chicken was being pulled, it caused a loud ruckus, waking up the few family members that were sleeping nearby. As everyone tried to grasp what was happening, the chicken was successfully yanked out of the house and the altar was left a mess. No one saw what was pulling the chicken out, but some relatives assumed it was a human thief, while others thought it was something else, considering it was a time where Dajjal, la la, or demons roamed. Regardless of who or what it was, the ritual was broken. Everyone was frantic. Some relatives ran out to chase down the supposed thief, while others studied the messy altar. Soon the relatives returned with no thief. Once the calamity had settled, the elders of the family gathered and debated on what actions to take next. Concern masked everyone's face, not because a thief stole from us, but because a thief had broken a very important ritual. If a thief had stolen any other chicken at any other time, this would not have been a major issue. Our elders knew that the tzi suka ritual should not be performed more than once during the new year, so they opted to wait for the morning to make a decision on what to do next. As morning greeted us with the rooster's crows, the news of what had happened during the night had been relayed to our family leaders. They gathered at our house and began discussing. The leaders were furious with the taboo that had occurred. Many bystanders that caught wind of the calamity asked, "How are you so lazy that a thief was able to steal right under your noses?" Others stated, "If you can't even worship and guard the altar properly, then you don't deserve the luck it brings." After a long day of bickering back and forth on whether or not the ritual can be performed again, an elderly woman of our clan settled the commotion and got the attention of the family. According to my grandparents, that elderly woman was considered a great aunt to our clan during the time, otherwise known as Mo Pao. With the family's attention, the Mo Pao bickered and shouted at everyone. She exclaimed, "How are you all so careless? Why was no one watching the altar, and how did no one see that thing stole the chicken? The ritual is broken, so what can you do? There is nothing you can do." With the status of being an elder, everyone just listened as she expressed herself. "If you can't even watch over the sacrificial chicken for the sika, how are you going to watch over your land and your livestock? How are you able to become wealthy without even being able to guard a cooked chicken? By breaking this ritual, you have tabooed and will forever be cursed. For everyone in this family, no one will be able to raise a sika. If you raise a sika, the sika will only bring poverty instead of wealth. Once the sika has had its fill with your wealth, it will take the life of your parents, and if your parents has already passed, it will take your children. The generous sika will become the greatest waste to all of your incompetence." Everyone, from children to the elderly leaders, listened without making a sound. The Mo Pao had finished her scolding and made her way out of the home, disappointed. The elders began to take their exits as well, with the last of them saying that we will have to just wait for the next year to raise the sika again. Throughout the year, everything seemed normal. Family members were sick here and there, but nothing major took place. As the new year approached, the traditions resumed and some relatives once again raised their sika. This is when strange things began to occur. One of our relatives had raised his sika during the new year. A couple of months later, his dad became ill. No one could figure out what was the cause of his sickness. Within a short amount of time after being sick, he suddenly died. Not long after, the same relative's mom also became sick. No amount of medicinal herbs or ceremonies were able to relieve the illness. His mother soon followed the same fate as his dad. Another relative had also raised his sika during the new year and began noticing that more and more of his livestock became missing. He investigated and found that many animals were dead. No injuries, just dead. Livestock during the time was used as currency, so with fewer livestock, his wealth was being stripped away from him. Shortly after, other relatives had raised the sika also began experiencing similar tragedies. The elders noticed these occurrences and decided to gather and discuss the recent incidents. Every family had a chance to explain any weird instances that may have occurred to them since the new year. During the discussion, our clan leaders and elders were there. The elderly woman was also there. After everyone explained the losses and illnesses that the clan had received, the Mo Pao chimed in. She stated that these things happened because of the broken ritual from the previous year, and that she had already told everyone that if they raised the sika again, poverty, sickness, and death would take over their family. Once again, she scolded the family members for their incompetence and carelessness. The elders looked around and said nothing, but they all knew what had happened and why those things happened to the relatives. At that moment, our clan members realized that we received a curse that was created by an ancient method that did not require any special tools or gadgets. Once the Mo Pao had concluded her lecture, the elders and clan leaders all came to an agreement that everyone who had a sika in their home must go and tear it down as soon as possible. My grandparents explained that by having Dao Mo Pao Zhe, as in Mo Pao yelling at them, they were no longer able to raise and or worship the sika. If anyone ever raises a sika in their home, the parents of the person raising the sika will suddenly become gravely ill and die shortly after. Once the parents die and you still have the sika, it will come for your possessions. Back then, it was livestock and crops, but in this era, it will eat away at your money, belongings, properties, basically anything that could be deemed as wealth. Allegedly, our curse is so strong that even the shamans in our family line are not able to raise the sika. To this day, many centuries later, no one in my family has or worships a sika. This curse has been with us for so long and is taken so seriously that even my grandparents questioned if anyone from our line still remembers how to raise the sika by using our ancient Ta traditions. I asked my grandparents if anyone has tried to raise the sika within the last few generations, and they simply answered no. And if you still want us and your parents to be alive, please don't ever try to raise the sika again. That is our story. We are the Hmong Tha Yai Sika. Thank you for listening to Mix in the Dark. I am your host, Mai Ying. Mix in the Dark is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast series. If you have a story that you would like to share, please send it to mixinthedark@gmail.com. If there's a story that you really enjoyed, feel free to hit up my tip jar on Venmo. Just search Mix in the Dark on the business tab.